the back pew of the Basilica di San Francesco. She was still bundled, with her gloved hands stuck partially in the pockets of her heavy overcoat. It was snowing again outside, and in the vast, cold, empty sanctuary, the temperature was not much warmer. He sat beside her and offered a soft buongiorno. She acknowledged him with just enough of a smile to be considered polite, and said, buongiorno. He kept his hands in his pockets, too, and for a long time they sat like two frozen hikers hiding from the weather. As usual, her face was sad, and her thoughts were on something other than this bumbling Canadian businessman who wanted to speak her language. She was aloof and distracted, and Marco was fed up with her attitude. Ermanno was losing interest by the day. Francesca was barely tolerable. Luigi was always back there, lurking and watching, but he, too, seemed to be losing interest in the game. Marco was beginning to think that the break was about to happen. Cut the lifeline and set him adrift to sink or swim on his own. So be it. He had been free for almost a month. He had learned enough Italian to survive. He could certainly learn more by himself. So, how old is this one? He said after it became apparent that he was expected to speak first. She shifted slightly, cleared her throat, took her hands out of her pockets, as if he'd awakened her from a deep sleep.
It was begun in 1236 by some Franciscan monks. 30 years later, the main sanctuary here was complete.
A rush job?
Yes, quite fast. Over the centuries, the chapel sort of sprang up along both sides. The sacristy was built, then the bell tower. The French, under Napoleon, deconsecrated it in 1798 and turned it into a customs house. In 1886, it was converted back to a church, then restored in 1928. When Bologna was bombed by the Allies, its facade was extensively damaged. It's had a rough history.
It's not very pretty on the outside.
Bombing will do that.
I guess you picked the wrong side.
Bologna did not.
No sense refighting the war. They paused as their voices seemed to float up and echo slightly around the dome. Backman's mother had taken him to church a few times each year as a child, but that half-hearted effort at pursuing a faith had been abandoned quickly in high school and totally forgotten over the past 40 years. Not even prison could convert him, unlike some of the other inmates. But it was still difficult for a man with no convictions to understand how any style of meaningful worship could be conducted in such a cold, heartless museum. It seems so empty. Does anyone ever worship in this place?
There's a daily mass and services on Sunday. I was married here.
You're not supposed to talk about yourself. Luigi will get mad.
Italian, Marco. No more English.
In Italian, she asked him,
What did you study this morning with Ermanno?
La famiglia.
La sua famiglia, mi dica.
Tell me about your family. It's a real mess, he said in English.
Sua moglie?
Your wife. Which one? I have three.
Italian.
Quale ne ho tre?
L'ultima.
The last one. Then he caught himself. He was not Joel Backman with three ex-wives and a screwed-up family. He was Marco Lazzari from Toronto, with a wife, four children, and five grandchildren. I was kidding, he said in English. I have one wife.
Mi dica in italiano di sua moglie.
Tell me about your wife. In very slow Italian, Marco described his fictional wife. Her name is Laura. She is 52 years old. She lives in Toronto. She works for a small company. She does not like to travel, and so on. Every sentence was repeated at least three times. Every mispronunciation was met with a grimace and a quick, ripeta. Over and over, Marco went on and on about a Laura who did not exist. And when he finished with her, he was led to his oldest child, another creation, this one named Alex. 30 years old, a lawyer in Vancouver, divorced with two kids, etc., etc. Fortunately, Luigi had given him a little biography on Marco Lazzari, complete with all the data he was now reaching for in the back of a frigid church. She prodded him on, urging perfection, cautioning against speaking too fast, the natural tendency.
Deve parlare lentamente,
she kept saying. You must speak slowly. She was strict and no fun, but also very motivational. If he could learn to speak Italian half as well as she spoke English, then he would be ahead of the pack. If she believed in constant repetition, then so did he. As they were discussing his mother, an elderly gentleman entered the church and sat in the pew directly in front of them. He was soon lost in meditation and prayer. They decided to make a quiet exit. A light snow was still falling, and they stopped at the first cafe for espresso and a smoke.
Adesso, possiamo parlare della sua famiglia?
He asked. Can we talk about your family now? She smiled, showed teeth, a rarity, and said,
Benissimo, Marco.
Very good.
Ma non possiamo, mi dispiace.
But I'm sorry. We cannot.
Perché no?
Why not?
Abbiamo delle regole.
We have rules.
Dove suo marito?
Where is your husband?
Qui, a Bologna.
Here, in Bologna.
Dove lavora?
Where does he work?
Non lavora.
After her second cigarette, they ventured back onto the covered sidewalks and began a thorough lesson about snow. She delivered a short sentence in English, and he was supposed to translate it. It is snowing. It never snows in Florida. Maybe it will snow tomorrow. It snowed twice last week. I love the snow. I don't like snow. They skirted the edge of the main plaza and stayed under the porticos. On Via Rizzoli, they passed the store where Marco bought his boots and his parka, and he thought she might like to hear his version of that event. He could handle most of the Italian. He let it pass, though, since she was so engrossed in the weather. At an intersection, they stopped and looked at Le Due Torri, the two surviving towers that the Bolognese were so proud of. There were once more than 200 towers, she said. Then she asked him to repeat the sentence. He tried, butchered the past tense and the number, and was then asked to repeat the damn sentence until he got it right. In medieval times, for reasons present-day Italians cannot explain, their ancestors seized upon the unusual architectural compulsion of building tall, slender towers in which to live. Since tribal wars and local hostilities were epidemic, the towers were meant principally for protection. They were effective lookout posts and valuable during attacks, though they proved to be less than practical as living quarters. To protect the food, the kitchens were often on the top floor, 300 or so steps above the street, which made it difficult to find dependable domestic help. When fights broke out, the warring families were known to simply launch arrows and fling spears at each other from one offending tower to the other. No sense fighting in the streets like common folk. They also became quite the status symbol. No self-respecting noble could allow his neighbor and or rival to have a taller tower, so in the 12th and 13th centuries, a curious game of one-upmanship raged over the skyline of Bologna as the nobles tried to keep up with the Joneses. The city was nicknamed La Turrita, the Towered One. An English traveler described it as a bed of asparagus. By the 14th century, organized government was gaining a foothold in Bologna, and those with vision knew that the warring nobles had to be reined in. The city, whenever it had enough muscle to get away with it, tore down many of the towers. Age and gravity took care of others. Poor foundations crumbled after a few centuries. In the late 1800s, a noisy campaign to tear them all down was narrowly approved. Only two survived, Essenelli and Garisenda. Both stand near each other at the Piazza di Porto Ravignana. Neither stands exactly straight, with Garisenda drifting off to the north at an angle that rivals the more famous and far prettier one in Pisa. The two old survivors have evoked many colorful descriptions over the decades. A French poet likened them to two drunk sailors staggering home, trying to lean on one another for support. Ermanno's guidebook referred to them as the Laurel and Hardy of medieval architecture. La Torre degli Asinelli was built in the early 12th century, and at 90